This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I will tell you right now, I have no notes. I'm not sure exactly what happened. Let me clear my throat a little bit. But last night I went, looked at my list. I really didn't have anything in my list. And I was gonna do some searching and trying to find, you know, a story to talk about. And every time I went to try to find a story to talk about, it was just like, nope, nope, nope. I thought, okay. Well, then maybe we just talk about events of the week. So this is just gonna be one of those podcasts where it's probably more for the grandkids, or if Jesus tarries, great-grandkids. If he really tarries, great-great-grandkids. If they have any interest at all. I think it's episode 710, I think. But this is just one of those kind of stake-in-the-ground episodes where it's just fascinating to see where we are right now as a country, and to see if there is a way to look forward a bit and project. I will have to say that as of 6-7 months ago, maybe a little longer, maybe a year ago, there were a lot of questions that I had about where the country was headed. Because it seemed like there was so much noise, and it seemed like there was so much fog and camouflage and everything else, and it seemed like every institution had been compromised, and no one really cared. I mean, I had the people that I was listening to, per se, who I believed to be straightforward, responsible, reflective people who were trying to genuinely analyze facts and respond to the facts. But it seemed like they weren't getting much of anywhere, that all the national narratives, all the high-level stuff was all curated in such a way that there was zero space for anything else. Which was very interesting. And I kept wondering, okay, are we gonna keep going down this path? Because honestly, there's, you know, the path we were on then had echoes and familiarity to stuff that's been prophesied, specifically with regards to the prophecies about the beast and economics with the beast. You know, Revelation certainly talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, talks about famine and hunger and or inflation, depending on how you interpret that. It talks about disease, talks about death, which, by the way, if you haven't been following the excess death statistics, that's very interesting. John Campbell out of England just did another podcast on the excess death statistics in the UK, and he's just flabbergasted that no one in the mainstream media is even talking about this, seemingly. And he was running statistics and showing how they have more excess deaths per week now in England, like 1,800 and something like 1,875 a week, something like that, they're averaging. Excess deaths, not COVID deaths, excess over what you would expect based on the last 5 years. He was saying, if I got this right, that when we were in that first wave of the pandemic, there were less excess deaths due to COVID in that first wave of the pandemic than there are going on right now that aren't COVID deaths. And he said, in the first wave of the pandemic, everybody was raising their hands and waving, and all the media were saying, this is terrible, we got to get this under control, we got to find out what's going on, we got to do this. And he said, now, he said, we're having all these excess deaths that no one can explain, and no one cares. So, you know, four horsemen of the apocalypse. I mean, there was a whole lot of stuff going on a year ago that, as I looked at it, it was like, well, you know, who knows? This might be it. Maybe we are in the end times, and maybe we're going to get to the place where if you don't sign off on this particular ideology, that we're going to go to digital currencies and they're just going to shut you down. So one of my buddies was telling me that Google has just changed their terms of service. And if you want to be listed in the App Store for Google, part of their terms of service is that if you exhibit any sort of hate speech, you know, which is quantifiable, if according to them, where you don't accept, you know, this and that, and if you don't accept, if you have anything in your stuff that, you know, goes against any of this stuff, that they're just going to yank you from the store. There's no appeal. They're just going to yank you. And I told him, I said, you know, I said, I think things are changing. And I said, I wouldn't surprise me at all if that starts drifting, because they're businesses. You know, for all of their attempts to be woke, they're businesses. And that's really what's been fascinating to watch over the last year, and specifically over the last few months. Because it seemed like it was all heading in one direction. And then you started hearing these little rumors about companies trying to do this whole woke agenda with the whole woke training and all that kind of stuff. And it just causing such division and derisiveness inside the company that some of the companies just said, you know what, we're done. They just fired all those people in human resources. And they say, you come to work, you do your job. Just do your job. If you got a problem with somebody, that's fine. You come to us, but we're not doing no more of that stuff, because all it's doing is just tearing us up. Which, of course it is. Because all of the woke stuff is really predicated on an us versus them mentality. No matter what the goodness of their supposed hearts are to evoking all of this empathy, what it comes down to is, at the end of the day, is look how righteous I am, and I can identify that you're not. And I'm going to tell you what you need to do to be righteous. This is Phariseeism. This has existed for thousands of years, and it existed before the Pharisees. Because anybody who figures out how they're a little more righteous than someone else, eventually you will get some zealots in that group who will decide they're more righteous than everybody who's in the group, and then they'll push the less zealot out of the group, and then they'll form their own group, and then they will start spinning, and then they will eat their own. Because once you get a group of zealots together, each zealot is going to start trying to prove that they're more zealotry. They have better zealotry than anybody else. I mean, it'll just... because it's all flesh, and it's all us versus them, and it's all going to drive right down into destruction. Always. Always. And that's where it looked like it was headed, frankly, for, you know, a year ago. It was like, wow, this is just going to descend. And because I knew it was going to descend, I don't know that I was necessarily too concerned about it. I just didn't know how long it would be before something really started to kick back. Now, as it turns out, when you do things and those policies directly result in higher energy costs, ridiculously higher energy costs, and ridiculously high inflation, and all there is excuses and not taking responsibility and not doing the obvious things that you could do to help that stuff, you know, then people get mad. So it's been really interesting to watch as attitudes started shifting. And you had things like what was happening in Sri Lanka, where the government had denied farmers the use of chemical fertilizers because of the greenhouse and because of this, that, and the other, and blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, they can't feed their people. And then they topple the government. Really interesting seeing the protest of the Dutch farmers, trucker convoys in Canada, you know, start of trucker convoys here in the States. I mean, it was and then not only to see those, but to see the reactions to those, because all of a sudden people start looking at this and going, whoa, 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 wait a minute, wait. This doesn't, what do you mean they're freezing bank accounts just because you sent an offering to the truckers of Canada? They're going to freeze your bank accounts? You know, hold up, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Now, a lot of those entities are still in power, but it does feel like, at least in the United States and in some other countries, that there is the beginnings of a shift where people are saying, this is a problem. What, Italy? We had an election in Italy where it went much more conservative, much more nationalistic, and of course there were people sounding, it's fascism. Okay, yeah, okay, sure. So obviously we have an election coming up next Tuesday. This is going to be very, very interesting. And it's been fascinating to watch the drift. Do I know what's going to happen Tuesday? No. But I can guarantee you, if there isn't some kind of a red wave, that people are going to be asking a lot of questions, because the polling seems certainly to indicate that there's going to be. And that polling typically over-favors Democrats. We've seen this for years now, that the polling over-favors Democrats. And I heard somebody say, that's because Republicans don't answer their phone anymore and everything's done by phone. I don't know if that's true or not. If that's true and everything's already drifting Democrat, yeah, well, there may be a problem next Tuesday if we don't have a red wave. I mean, it's really interesting. Some of these races have been just fascinating to watch. You know, like the race in Georgia, where you've got Stacey Abrams running against Kemp, I think. Stacey Abrams, who never accepted the results of her defeat for governor, who has said things like, scientists say that the fetus doesn't have a heartbeat at 6 weeks. It's like, what? No, no. And then you have the liberal press coming in and trying to make allowances for her. And you just kind of look at it and go, no, no. You know, you've got the Senate race in Pennsylvania where, bless his heart, what is his name? The guy who had the stroke. It's like, will you please get the guy off the stage and get him someplace where he can recover? Why are you putting him under this kind of stress? He has such trouble communicating. And the philosophy is, well, but at least he'll vote like we want him to vote. No, that's not. That's not a representative form of government. We're not a democracy. We're a representative form of government, and the point of a representative form of government is to elect representatives, people who vote their consciences, that they tell you who they are, and the basis of who they are, you vote for them and say, go to Washington, make your best decisions. But pay attention to what we want as well. Okay, so this is, you know, to see this drift and to see this shift and to see one party apparently clueless that the most important issues are the economy. And instead of addressing that, falling back on things like January 6th, threat to democracy. How many times have we heard threat to democracy, threat to democracy, election denier, threat to democracy? That's like the whole pitch. Including the president making a fairly impromptu speech. I mean, I know it's not impromptu because they have to script him because he's not good impromptu. Last minute, last ditch attempt to convince everybody that, you know, if you vote for anyone who doesn't accept election results, you know, that's a threat to democracy. Okay, well, it's going to be really interesting to see if there is a red wave, how many of the blue candidates that get voted out will actually say that was a fair election, or will they start becoming quote-unquote election deniers? It's really going to be fascinating to see how this goes. In the midst of all this, of course, you've got all the social agenda things going on as well. So the transgenderism stuff, the Black Lives Matter stuff. But all of these things, the parental choice stuff with schools, the rights of parents to know what's going on in schools and to not have teachers telling kids things about sexuality and gender and then telling the kids not to tell the parents and then telling parents, we can tell them anything we want and you don't have any say in this. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's really fascinating to watch all this stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see where the pushback comes, because it seems like for these 2 years of this administration, there has been a concerted effort to stick their fingers in everybody's eye to offend every possible person they could offend and to just shove down their agenda, whether anybody liked it or not. It's just been fascinating to watch. Come in, well, we're going to withdraw leasing and we're going to shut down this pipeline and we're going to do this because it's climate change stuff. And then, of course, we're in the situation now where the East Coast is going to be facing serious diesel shortages and heating oil shortages. Now, some of that was because of demand slacking off during the pandemic, but some of that was definitely because when the new administration came in, they shut down oil leases, they shut down pipelines, they made it very clear that they were going to do everything they could to discourage the use. Okay, well, that puts bottlenecks into the system, and then the oil companies don't produce as much as you want. And then all of a sudden there's shortages, and then prices skyrocket. And then on the back of that, you get inflation, not to mention the trillions of dollars that were injected into the economy. And even after everything that's gone on, people are still spending money because they had it in their pockets because it was given to them for free. So this is all fascinating. So the question now that we face kind of as a country is, do we want to keep going down this road? Do we want to keep doing what a lot of consultants do that I see doing all the time when they come in and say, well, all this is terrible. This is just terrible. This is the old way of doing it. We have a new way of doing it. A new way. We just need to tear everything down, tear it all down, and then rebuild it, and it'll be better. I've seen that so many times. And it's this attitude of, we're going to tell you that we know better than anybody else what has to happen, and we got to do something radical and drastic, and we've got to tear this thing down to the bones and rebuild it. Except they're really good at tearing things down, but they're not so good at rebuilding. And they're definitely not good at, as the saying goes, keeping the wheels on the cart in the meantime. What we've been seeing with the economy, with inflation, with high gas prices, all that kind of, the wheels are coming off the cart. So we can keep doing what we're doing and crash the cart and really cause extremely serious economic times. Or we can start taking some steps back. Now, depending on what happens on Tuesday, will depend on whether we end up with a stalemated government that just nothing else will happen, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes the best thing that can happen is just to get out of the way and let the economy figure it out. But that does mean there's going to be some uncomfortable times, and there's going to be some pain, and there's going to be, you know, because we got ourselves into a pickle. Now, I mean, it's not good. I'm getting my mail. I was telling some friends about this, that, and I probably have mentioned this before, but lands, we have got ourselves in such a predicament now with inflation and then having to raise interest rates and driving the economy into a recession. We've got ourselves into such a pickle now that it's going to take us a year, year and a half, 2 years to get out of this if there's a lot of pain. There's going to have to be high interest rates. It's going to have to cool off the economy. It's going to have to slow down the inflation rates. We have got to get more energy pumping. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see after Tuesday if where we end up is a deadlocked government, which wouldn't necessarily be bad, stopping any sort of divine fiat, continuance of these divine fiat stuff that we've been experiencing, where the administration says, well, we're not sure this is legal, but we're going to do it anyways. And by the time we find out, you know, that'll all be implemented, you know, like this vax mandate thing for OSHA, that OSHA was going to require that everybody get vaxxed. And then, of course, you know, we finally acknowledge, and lawsuits came, and Supreme Court strikes stuff down. And then we finally acknowledge that, oh, yeah, by the way, those COVID vaccines, they won't keep you from getting COVID. And they won't keep you from spreading it to others either. So this whole idea that you need to get vaccinated so that you can save grandma, yeah, that never was true. Never, ever. The only thing that was true was that if you get vaccinated and you're in a high-risk group, you stand a pretty good chance of surviving if you get the COVID vaccines. It's just fascinating. You know, it's just fascinating to watch this stuff trickle out. The other option is that there can be a true red wave. And if, you know, they don't say the chances are very good for this, but if it ends up being a true red wave where you've got a two-thirds majority in the Senate, you know, you've got veto override capability, well, then things will get really, really interesting. But, you know, with all of this, what can we say? If God be for us, who can be against us? And in 50,000 years, what difference is it going to make? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.